Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Looking for a positive and energizing boost to the mental health conversation with a special bend toward the needs of teen girls and young women? You are in the right place. Welcome to the Mary Walden Show. Yes, there are challenges. Yes, there are struggles. And all across North America, there are people and resources to help and enrich our journey. We hope today's program will help provide you with both information and inspiration as we embark on an in-depth mental health conversation. Now, here is your host, Mary Walden.
Thank you for joining me on The Mary Walden Show. I'm your host, Mary Walden, a licensed clinical social worker. Hurricane Sandy hit the east coast of the U.S. hard, and an astronomical number of families are still recovering from its aftermath. Flooding, destruction, and all kinds of loss of property, and more importantly, loss of life, and loss of the day-to-day functioning of life as we once knew it. Living through this kind of experience can have a lasting impact on children and teens. And so today, we've invited with us to talk is Dr. Narina Garcia Arsamont from Williamsburg Therapy and Wellness in Brooklyn, New York. Dr. Garcia is a licensed clinical psychologist who has worked with individuals going through transitions that cause stress, anxiety, depression, and PTSD. She also worked at the World Trade Center Environmental Healthcare Center at Bellevue Hospital in New York City, which was a program specifically designed for individuals impacted by the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Garcia.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. How do natural disasters like Hurricane Sandy impact teens who experience this kind of trauma directly?
Well, teens, like adults, experience a natural disaster as sort of this confusing, unnatural event that throws people off from their day-to-day routine. So what's unique about teens is, you know, they're in that developmental stage where they think they're adults, but they're not quite adults, and they don't have all the coping strategies developed yet that adults do. And they're in that developmental stage where they're still sort of figuring out what they think and believe about the world. And so when a natural disaster hits, it can really impact whether they feel safe in the world, whether they believe that they can depend on others to take care of them. And just natural things that they might feel are feeling scared, developing a depression or anxiety, or even PTSD.
And we're going to talk more specifically in a moment about PTSD. But when we're talking about the impact of a disaster like this one, we're talking about a lot of kids, because not only are we talking about the kids who've lived through it, but the kids who are sort of vicariously living through it by seeing it from afar. Can you say some more about that?
Sure. Yeah, so we're learning from other natural disasters and from, you know, the 9/11 attacks that watching these events on TV can have a vicarious traumatic experience. Granted, maybe they won't develop PTSD, but it can impact them emotionally. They might develop some level of anxiety or worry, and it does sort of shape how they, their worldview, how they see themselves within the world. So if, you know, they're in California and they think, oh, wow, this horrible thing happened to kids just like me out there, what could happen to me here? And it could lead them to sort of ruminate about bad things that could happen to them. And if they don't see that enough help is coming to the rescue, then it might have them think about, okay, well, can I depend on adults? Can I depend on my authority figures to protect me and to keep me safe? And unfortunately, with Hurricane Sandy, I mean, it looks like a lot of people got out. You know, there was a mandatory evacuation, but they're coming back to devastation. So granted, there were a lot of people that died, but they're also sort of what's left behind is a wreckage, right? So whether they're seeing it on TV, whether they're experiencing it firsthand, they're seeing that something that's completely out of their control changed their landscape. And that's going to create a lot of confusion, a lot of fear, and they're going to be looking to adults for guidance and to help them feel safe.
So what you're saying is that whether they experience the trauma directly or indirectly by seeing it on television, there's a lot of similarity in terms of the response and in terms of the worry.
Yes. Granted, the intensity is going to be different. When we think of trauma, we think of sort of a bullseye. The closer you are to the center, the more likely you are to have a more severe reaction like PTSD. But the further you are on that bullseye, you're still feeling ripple effects. Yeah, maybe a kid out in California might not develop PTSD, but they might have a few nightmares and they might, you know, worry a little more and have those thoughts sort of be intrusive throughout the day.
So let's talk about specifically, what is PTSD, number one? What are the signs and symptoms? And number two, how prevalent is it among teens?
Okay. So PTSD is a very natural reaction to an unnatural event. Something like surviving a natural disaster, a terrorist attack, being in a car accident, seeing violence committed on others or yourself. So this is a natural way that your brain sort of tries to figure out how to make sense of this horrible thing that just happened. And very typical reactions are having bad dreams, not being able to sleep very well, having flashbacks. So you're reliving the event in your head, physiological stress. So your heart pounds, you breathe fast or shallow, you feel nauseous, you avoid things. So you'll avoid reminders of that traumatic experience. So maybe these teens will start avoiding going to the beach, or they'll start having to sleep with the lights on because they're worried something bad will happen.
Mm-hmm.
They start to isolate and feel really numb. And they start to get very irritable, having concentration problems. They get hypervigilant. So they're sort of watchful, making sure, well, is there another, it's cold outside, there's wind. Does that mean there's going to be another hurricane? And just very easily startled. Now for teens, so that's just typical PTSD. For teens, what you see is sometimes they have physical complaints. So they'll have stomach aches or headaches. They start to cope by using smoking, alcohol, or drugs. They start to act in antisocial ways. So they act out at school or at home. They're disrespectful to adults. And just sort of in general start to isolate from others.
So really cutting themselves off, a general kind of irritability, easily startled, maybe very reactive.
Yes. Now one thing to definitely watch out for is if you notice that they're getting depressed or saying that, maybe life isn't worth living, that kind of thing, because that's definitely sort of red flags to watch out for.
That absolutely, yeah, needs attention.
Yes.
Now, when you're talking, though, about the presentation about PTSD, and you're talking about different kinds of disasters, meaning like man-made disasters versus natural disasters. Is there a different type of presentation?
They tend to present in the same way, but sometimes they are more intense when they're man-made, in the sense of they're more prolonged. So people who experience a terrorist attack are more likely to have a more intense and longer presentation of depression, anxiety, or PTSD than from a natural disaster, because I think it sort of shatters your worldview, right? Like often we have this worldview that bad things happen to bad people, but bad things don't happen to good people. And when there's a terrorist attack, that sort of gets shattered. Mm-hmm. On top of that, can the police, can my government keep me safe? So that gets people really worried and scared, and they can't trust in others. And also just sort of a shattering of trust in humanity. Like, what? Another human wanted to hurt me? Whereas a natural disaster, we can, so, you know, if you're a spiritual person, you might say, well, this higher power or God, it happened, or, you know, it's nature. This happens, and it happens cyclically. It's not my fault. I didn't bring this on me. So you can almost explain it away a little easier, or make sense of it a little bit more with a natural disaster than with a terrorist attack. And the fact that you can't make as sense of it as quickly with a terrorist attack or man-made traumatic experience is what gets people sort of stuck in this PTSD cycle.
Right, because you're talking about sort of the fundamental nature of humankind on the one hand, and on the other hand, you're talking about an act of God that oftentimes, thankfully, and I think we did see this with Hurricane Sandy, because of technology, we're getting more and more advanced warning about natural disasters that we can hopefully make some sort of adjustment to mitigate that trauma.
Exactly. So a lot of people, imagine if Hurricane Sandy, we'd had no warning, just like September 11th, the kind of shock that would have been experienced and the loss of life versus, you know, we knew we could evacuate. It's still horrifying to watch the destruction, but we can at least say, oh, thank God we got out. And there were people out there watching out for our well-being and took care of us enough to tell us, get out.
Right, that, hey, this is coming. And there is some element of choice of saying, okay, am I going to stay here and ride it out, or am I going to heed the warning of, you know, the weather professionals or whatever?
Right. So you had asked me about prevalence. I wanted to throw that in there. Mm-hmm. Prevalence between 13 and 18-year-olds is about 4% of the population will experience PTSD. And actually, PTSD is a little more common in girls than boys. Almost 6% versus 2% for males. And that's probably just the function of females are unfortunately traumatized a little more, you know, sexual assault, different things like that than but I think when you're talking about natural disaster, it's likely to occur sort of evenly between males and females because they're both impacted in a similar way. But there definitely are risk factors to look out for.
And we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about those risk factors. We're being joined today by Dr. Narina Garcia Arsamont, and you're listening to The Mary Walden Show on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel, and we'll be right back.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
15 to 20% of young people will struggle with depression before they reach adulthood. If this or any other disease, we would consider it an epidemic and take action. Depression is a common, serious, and treatable mental illness. Often young people will not receive the help they deserve due to a lack of awareness and cultural stigma. Mental health is for everyone, and teaching our youth about it can even save lives. Help shine a light on teen depression and visit Erica's Lighthouse website. For more information, go to erikaslighthouse.org.
If you like what you hear on The Mary Walden Show, or if what you hear leaves you wanting more, more information, more resources, and more support, check out MaryWalden.com. At Mary's website, you will find expanded interviews of the guests featured on our show, as well as handouts and support materials referenced on the air. You'll also find the Inspiring Women series podcast, available for free and easy download. The Inspiring Women series was developed to showcase women from across the country who have a story to tell that can inspire young women to capture their dreams and be who they are meant to be. At MaryWalden.com, you will also find links to Mary's DVD on self-harm, her blog, and Mary's upcoming lectures and workshops in the Chicagoland area. Visit MaryWalden.com today. That address again is www.MaryWalden.com. You can also follow Mary on Facebook and Twitter. And remember to forward comments or suggestions for the show to change@MaryWalden.com. And thank you.
Has your child been underperforming in school, acting out at home, or engaging in inappropriate and dangerous behaviors, such as experimenting with alcohol and other drugs? If so, Aspen Education Group may have the solutions you've been searching for. As the nation's premier provider of therapeutic residential programs for adolescents and teens, Aspen has a long and successful history of transforming the lives of struggling youth. To learn how Aspen can help your child, call 855-373-7755 today. Aspen Education Group. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@MaryWalden.com. Again, that's change@MaryWalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
And we're back with The Mary Walden Show. Today joining us is Dr. Narina Garcia Arsema from Williamsburg Therapy and Wellness. Dr. Garcia is an expert on trauma and PTSD. Dr. Garcia, before we went for the break, we started to talk about risk factors. What are the risk factors and what should parents look for when making the evaluation of whether they need to get help for their child?
So, as I said, PTSD is a natural reaction. These things that I described earlier, the not sleeping well, having the nightmares, isolating, those are likely to happen in a majority of adults and children. And they will usually last a few weeks until the brain sort of makes sense of everything, and then they start to decrease. Now, if you notice that these problems are still there after a few weeks, you should seek out a mental health professional just to get evaluated and make sure that, you know what, this isn't just going away. We're not just toughing it out and it's sort of dissipating into the air. There's definitely treatment out there that's effective that can help a child. These problems can, if they're not dealt with, can go on for years and into their adult life. And so as parents who have unfortunately gone through this horrible hurricane, that's another added sort of responsibility and pressure that they have to sort of watch out for and make sure that their kids are going to be okay. But that said, only a small percentage are likely to develop PTSD. Less than 10% are likely to develop PTSD from this natural disaster. So it's, you know, if your child's having a nightmare in the first month or so, you don't have to rush to a psychologist. But if it's going on for a few weeks or a month, then maybe start watching out for it.
Absolutely. So really keeping your eyes open, being tuned in to duration. And then if you have the sense, even at any point in any of the weeks following such an intense experience, you know, get the evaluation. What's to be lost by that if you're not sure?
Right. So the risk factors that I was going to mention. So if your child or you were directly involved in like the evacuation or impacted by Hurricane Sandy, if they were there and you guys are living in shelters or living in a house that still doesn't have electricity or has been damaged, that can also be a negative impact. Having a prior trauma. So if your child had been a car accident or experienced some other kind of trauma before this, that sets them up for potentially developing PTSD. Having a family or personal history of mental illness. So if they've had anxiety or depression before, keep your eyes open for PTSD symptoms. A lack of social support or a lack of a caring family or circle of friends is probably one of the hugest risk factors, and therefore also the best way to mitigate PTSD is to make sure you're providing a lot of social support. And unfortunately, this is going to be a huge one. Ongoing stressors like living in a new house, going to a new school, having financial problems. So for a lot of these people who've become homeless because their homes were damaged, they're going to have to go to a new school, these teenagers, and they're going to live in new homes or they're living with now relatives. That is a really stressful experience for a teenager. So what's going to help them get through this is providing a lot of support. Sitting down with them and saying, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Tell me what's going on for you. It's totally understandable that you're scared. I'm going to be here, and we're going to make it through together. So communicating that this teenager is not alone and doesn't have to tough it out alone. Now, things they should not do is force the teen to talk about it. So, like, tell me how you're feeling. What did you experience? Let the teen tell you when they're ready to tell you. Also, don't say things like, everything will be okay, because what if it isn't? Then they're going to think, well, my parent or my loved one lied to me, and I can't depend on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least you survived. That's really invalidating. It's true, yes, they survived, but they're still hurting. And don't tell them what you should be feeling. You should feel so happy that we're alive, or you should be acting more grateful. Because, you know, it's a situation that's really unfortunate and really scary, and whatever they're feeling is normal and natural. And also, something that might, you know, parents might not notice they're doing is maybe complain about the available help, so be angry at maybe the Red Cross isn't coming fast enough, or the electricity, you know, the electrical companies aren't turning the lights on fast enough, or FEMA isn't helping enough. Don't complain in front of the teen, because these are the agencies that take care of us, right? And if the teenager is hearing that they're not doing a good job, that goes into forming their worldview about the future and whether they can depend on other people and other agencies for help and support in the future.
So it really serves to undermine their concerns about, oh my gosh, what if something were to happen in the future? Or just sort of the fundamental, again, that fundamental perception about how does life work?
Yes. And really thinking, wow, so I can't depend on the government then to take care of me, and I can't depend on other people or philanthropy or support agencies, then I'm in this world alone. Mm-hmm. So then that really shapes how their worldview into the future, and they can then become older adults that, you know, isolate a lot and don't seek support when they really need it. Another thing that I would strongly recommend is for parents to encourage their teens to join support groups of other teens that have gone through this. So hopefully those will spring up in school, you know, gyms or different agencies where there's an opportunity for teenagers to talk to other teenagers that have gone through this, so that they realize they're not alone as they're going through this. It's really an effective way of reducing distress and actually reducing PTSD symptoms.
I think that's great advice, because it also just significantly reduces isolation, right? Having other people who can really relate and because they've experienced the same events.
Exactly.
You know, the thing that strikes me about this, and it's absolutely, you know, your directives about parents make 110% sense. And the other piece of this is, my gosh, you know, if I was a parent listening to this, having gone through this event myself, and they're trying to get their house rebuilt, and they're trying to get electricity on or food on the table, or to get life back to normal in just really dire circumstances, parents may not be, you know, entirely on their game during this process to really, you know, give to kids what they might need in the moment.
Yes, I think that's right on and really unfortunate. But this is all the advice I just gave applies to adults as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they should seek out their neighbors, their family, and talk about how they're hurting and how confused they are and how worried they are. Get all that out. Get support from mental health providers. There's nothing wrong with talking to another person about this. There's nothing shameful or weak about you for experiencing these symptoms. This is the natural response of the brain to a traumatic experience. And just to keep in mind that whatever parents are doing, your teens are watching. So if parents are turning to alcohol to reduce their stress in a very stressful situation, your teens are watching, like, oh, that's how you cope with stress. Or if parents are fighting or arguing about where are we going to go live, or, you know, they're watching. So try to do that behind closed doors and really seek the support they need as well, so that they can parent. Because being a parent is so stressful in and of itself, and now they've lost all their structure, right? They don't have the schools, they don't have the neighbors that they used to, you know, count on for childcare or just to hang out with. They've lost all that. So everyone's going through this together, but they're not alone.
I think that's a beautiful point. It is the sad and empowering truth that we are models for our children, and the way that we cope is really going to really shape how our children cope with such challenges. We're going to take a short break again, and we are speaking with Dr. Narina Garcia Arsamont, and you are listening to The Mary Walden Show on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We will be right back.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Aspen Education Group is the nation's premier provider of therapeutic education programs for teens with academic, behavioral, and emotional issues. With personalized treatment plans that have been customized to meet the specific needs of your child, Aspen is uniquely prepared to help transform your son or daughter from a struggling teenager into a successful and productive young adult. To discover if an Aspen program is the perfect place for your child, call 855-373-7755 today. Aspen Education Group. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow. Has your child been underperforming in school, acting out at home, or engaging in inappropriate and dangerous behaviors, such as experimenting with alcohol and other drugs? If so, Aspen Education Group may have the solutions you've been searching for. As the nation's premier provider of therapeutic residential programs for adolescents and teens, Aspen has a long and successful history of transforming the lives of struggling youth. To learn how Aspen can help your child, call 855-373-7755 today. Aspen Education Group. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.
Real Life Solutions. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
And welcome back to the Mary Walden Show on Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We're speaking with Dr. Narina Garcia Arcimont, an expert on PTSD and the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Garcia, before we left, we were talking about the various ways that parents can support their teen through this difficult process, which leads me to, you know, just the direct question of how can parents of teens help mitigate this impact of traumatic events, not only for their teen, but for themselves?
Right. So what we have found through research is that the one thing, like if you level the playing field for people, the one predictor of people who develop PTSD is the amount of social support that they had after or following the traumatic experience. So this is why isolating is the worst thing that you can do during this time. And we're seeing it with Hurricane Sandy. I think New Yorkers are pulling together, people are donating, people are, you know, volunteering, going out and helping people. So noticing that, not just focusing on the negative, which, you know, that's very easy to do, and very real, but focusing on the fact that, you know, oh, wow, people really care and people are trying to help. And let me reach out to my loved ones, instead of, you know what, I'm going to survive on my own here. I'm strong. I can do it. Know that you shouldn't do it alone, that it's going to be better for you if you actually sort of be part of the family, whether that means your friends, whether it's neighbors, whether it's biological family, but really staying together and using the social support available to you.
And I love this. I love the part of also then shining a light on how people really can come together during different difficult times like this, and pointing out how strangers are helping one another, because, you know, there really are countless examples during times like this in the U.S. where people really do reach out to those in need. I know I heard a story of a man who his restaurant, he spent the whole day, like several days, just cooking meals, one after the other for people, and not charging them and just caring for them in that way. And that's a beautiful humanitarian effort.
Yes. And, you know, for those who maybe are in New York City, but weren't, you know, they didn't lose a home, doing active things like volunteering, like donating, like baking and having a bake sale, any of these things that's going to be active where you feel like you're more in control and you're helping others is going to help you feel better. It's going to reduce your anxiety, your stress, your depression. So for those who can, be active, be helpful, get out there and support your neighbors. And for those who were directly impacted, notice that. But, as you're cleaning up your home, if you can help your neighbor and if your neighbor can help you, that's how you guys are going to get through this difficult period, knowing that you're not alone.
And that's a great point. And knowing that there's at least some comfort in, rather than you cleaning up your mess and me cleaning up mine, that we clean them up both together.
Yes.
And then the other piece of, for people who maybe were spared, maybe the impact wasn't quite as devastating on your family, to help not only model for your teen, but encourage your teen to participate.
Yes.
In reaching out to others, because it's a really helpful and useful thing to have something to do in those difficult times. How can I be of service in this time when, you know, I was spared and my neighbor is suffering?
Right. Yeah, because you can easily stay in your head and ruminate about, like, wow, I was so lucky and I feel so grateful, or I feel so guilty, you know? But I think when traumas happen, you just feel such a loss of control in your life. And you realize how small you are in this big picture. And so if you can join in the help, it gives you more of a sense of control over the world than just sort of, you know, being a limb being pushed around by the wind.
Mm-hmm. Great point. What kind of direction can you give parents with regard to information consumption during this time? Because there's just sort of no lack of stories and photos and videos online and on TV that are recreating this on a daily basis.
Right. Yeah. I think the worst thing that be done is watching too much TV or too much news coverage, whether they're doing it on an iPad, a computer, the television, because what's basically happening is they're getting re-traumatized. All the things that they saw firsthand, they're seeing again on TV, and that's a constant reminder. So it's not letting the mind heal and sort of make sense of things, because it's a constant sort of reopening of the wound, let's say. So I would strongly recommend limiting TV watching, news viewing, because it acts as a trigger. And so what's a trigger? Anything that is going to remind you of that traumatic experience. So if you're living in the Jersey Shore and you've lost your home, triggers can be the beach, can be the sound of waves, can be darkness, strong winds. So anytime they hear or see things that are similar, their body is going to automatically react in the same way that they did when they went through that traumatic experience to begin with. So their heart rate's going to go really fast. They're going to have trouble breathing. They might have flashbacks. They might be easily startled. They might get headaches, feel numbness or nauseous. So all that happens all over again. And it's really important that people not re-experience those memories in that way. I sort of, in my mind, imagine that our primitive brains have not caught up with technology. I don't believe the brain was meant to watch the traumatic experience over and over and over. I think the brain, you know, was meant to experience that trauma and make sense of it. But now with photos and with TV, we can watch what hurt us over and over. And I think that the brain just can't make sense of that. So my recommendation is just avoid watching news. It's just going to keep hurting you. And I think there's a compulsion to watch the news because we want to know what's happening. And so it's almost you can convince yourself that that's a way to be protective and take care of yourself. But really, it backfires and ends up hurting you in the end.
Well, that makes sense. You don't really want to watch the same event again and again. But how do you differentiate between avoidance of a trigger and just avoiding? Because, you know, some people may live near the beach. They need to see the beach.
Yes.
If they're living there. So there's a difference between looking at the ocean and looking at a video of destruction, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. And that's where healing is going to happen. We don't want people to avoid important things, like if they live at the beach, like they need to go back to the beach. If they avoid it, it's basically reinforcing, oh, I didn't go to the beach and therefore I was safe, which is a false assumption. So then they're like, you know what? To feel safe and to be safe, I need to just keep avoiding the beach, which is not at all the truth, right? So that would happen with like my 9/11 survivors, where they avoided going downtown. They avoided being on subways. They avoided going on tall buildings. They didn't go to public spaces where there were a lot of people, because their assumption was, this is where the bad things happen. So then their life started to be more and more constrained and lacking in the beauty and the enjoyment that they used to have in the past. So we don't want that, especially for your teens. If you notice that they're getting scared to do things that they used to do before, definitely talk to them. That's a warning sign for you that maybe they need to go talk to someone, or give them the support they need. Like, hey, Mom, I'm scared to go to the beach. What if, you know, a huge wave comes and takes us out into the ocean? Then talk to them about, you know, that sounds like a really natural fear. You know, let's walk on the beach and we'll stay away from the water for now and see how you feel. And I'm right here with you and I love you. That's important, I think, for parents to really emphasize to the kids, like, we're here, we're not going anywhere, and I really love you.
I think that's a great combination, because you're validating and saying that you understand what it is they're experiencing in the moment, while at the same time you're exposing them to the thing that they're fearing, meaning like the ocean or whatever, to keep them from their lives shrinking,
exactly,
if you will, and limiting their interaction. Because it's our natural drive, right, to avoid things that we fear are afraid of, and that we worry are going to have a negative impact on us. But the unfortunate scientific truth is that that just serves to reinforce those fears.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. This is a very primitive brain we're talking about. So say someone almost drowns, your brain wants to keep you alive. So the brain, anytime it sees large bodies of water, is going to say, what are you thinking? Get away from that water. Don't go into that pool again. So then the person who maybe enjoyed swimming starts going to the pool because they feel really anxious, and they avoid big, you know, like the ocean or whatever, because they're scared. And that's the brain protecting us in one way, but it also hurts us socially and just limits our lives.
That's a really great point. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Narina Garcia Arsimon. You are listening to The Mary Walden Show on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll be right back.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
15 to 20% of young people will struggle with depression before they reach adulthood. If this or any other disease, we would consider it an epidemic and take action. Depression is a common, serious, and treatable mental illness. Often young people will not receive the help they deserve due to a lack of awareness and cultural stigma. Mental health is for everyone, and teaching our youth about it can even save lives. Help shine a light on teen depression and visit Erica's Lighthouse website. For more information, go to erikaslighthouse.org.
If you like what you hear on The Mary Walden Show, or if what you hear leaves you wanting more information, more resources, and more support, check out marywalden.com. At Mary's website, you will find expanded interviews of the guests featured on our show, as well as handouts and support materials referenced on the air. You'll also find the Inspiring Women series podcast, available for free and easy download. The Inspiring Women series was developed to showcase women from across the country who have a story to tell that can inspire young women to capture their dreams and be who they are meant to be. At marywalden.com, you will also find links to Mary's DVD on self-harm, her blog, and Mary's upcoming lectures and workshops in the Chicagoland area. Visit marywalden.com today. That address again is www.marywalden.com. You can also follow Mary on Facebook and Twitter. And remember to forward comments or suggestions for the show to change@marywalden.com. And thank you.
Has your child been underperforming in school, acting out at home, or engaging in inappropriate and dangerous behaviors, such as experimenting with alcohol and other drugs? If so, Aspen Education Group may have the solutions you've been searching for. As the nation's premier provider of therapeutic residential programs for adolescents and teens, Aspen has a long and successful history of transforming the lives of struggling youth. To learn how Aspen can help your child, call 855 855-
1-800-373-7755 today. Aspen Education Group. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow. Aspen Education Group is the nation's premier provider of therapeutic education programs for teens with academic, behavioral, and emotional issues. With personalized treatment plans that have been customized to meet the specific needs of your child, Aspen is uniquely prepared to help transform your son or daughter from a struggling teenager into a successful and productive young adult. To discover if an Aspen program is the perfect place for your child, call 855-373-7755 today. Aspen Education Group. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to The Mary Walden Show, raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. If you have a question or comment for Mary or about the program, please send an email to change@marywalden.com. Again, that's change@marywalden.com. Now, back to this week's show.
And we're back. We're speaking with Dr. Narina Garcia Arsimon. She is an expert in the treatment of stress, anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. She's also worked at the World Trade Center Environmental Healthcare Center at Bellevue Hospital, New York City, where they had a program specifically designed for individuals affected by the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Dr. Garcia, what kind of things, what kind of suggestions might you have for parents to help their teen process this event and work through the emotions that may have come up as a result of this traumatic experience?
Right. And whether your child goes on to develop, say, PTSD, depression, or anxiety problem, that you know, that's sort of like the next thing to worry about. I think the first thing to worry about is, how do I just help my child through this horrible experience so that they know that they're not alone in this and that they can depend on their loved ones when going through a difficult time. And that's going to involve being very present and, you know, making sure that you guys are having dinners together, not sort of disconnecting, which I think is a very sort of seductive thing to do, just sort of like, you know what, I'm going to go on the internet and zone out, or watch TV and zone out because it's so scary. But really staying connected as a family and around the dinner table, or the breakfast table or the lunch table, whichever it is, it doesn't have to be dinner, talking to each other about, like, how'd your day go today? And what are you feeling and thinking today? You know, like, oh, well, I, you know, we went to our house and we saw these horrible things, you know, or we had to throw a lot of our memories away. What was that like for you guys? And this is what's going to be really important for parents to be willing to be vulnerable in front of their kids and say, you know what, it was hard for me to throw away our photo albums, or to not find your kid toys that I packed away, or to have to throw away all our furniture. Like, that made me really sad. How about you guys? So sort of modeling for the teenager how to talk about feelings, and the fact that feelings are normal and natural and don't make you weak. I would also encourage parents to encourage their kids to write down their thoughts. So keep a journal, and whether that's a real journal or just open a document on your iPad or computer, and just write out what they're thinking. That's going to help them process. If they're having a hard time saying it out loud, sometimes saying it on a piece of paper or typing it can help them sort of get out some of these feelings that they're having a hard time with. And like I said before, communicating that they're loved and that they're together and that they can turn to either them or another family member, and making sure that they're getting the social support they need and that their teenagers are getting the social support that they need.
I think that you make a great point about asking direct questions. We can so easily avoid and check out by, you know, tending to our phones or, surfing online or that kind of thing. And really asking the direct question, hey, that was really difficult. Modeling with yourself, saying, you know, it was really hard for Mom to go there and see our house in that disarray and see the things that were so precious to us be destroyed. How was that for you? Because oftentimes I hear so often, even in, and I'm sure you see this in your practice, that, you know, parents can tend to kind of shy away from those, you know, scary conversations. It takes a lot of courage to do that.
Right. I think it's scary to feel out of control. And sometimes when we're feeling a lot of feelings, which is typical, you know, we don't always just feel sadness. We often feel sadness and confusion and feeling overwhelmed and anxious. So it's a lot of feelings all at once. And it can be scary to feel them and to admit them, especially to your child, where, you know, if you don't believe, you know, that you should be expressing these things to your kids, that your kids should see you as, you know, the strong one. I think showing them that you're vulnerable is going to normalize it for them, that they're vulnerable. That's why I'm vulnerable. It's not just that I'm like weird or weak or because I'm younger, you know, it's like, okay, these things happen and my parents are talking about it and it's okay to talk about. It's going to help, I think, the entire family feel closer. This is an opportunity, if you could spin it in a positive way, for families to really join together and come out the other side really close and connected. Or it's also an opportunity for a family to disintegrate and pull apart. And that's what trauma does. It can really be disruptive and destructive.
Mm-hmm. To a family. Absolutely.
So this is where just acknowledging that you're hurting as like the entire family will be helpful. And also, as good things are happening, talk about those, focus on those, like, wow, you know, we got, you know, supplies today from strangers. Isn't that awesome, guys? Like, what do you guys think about the fact that people are helping? You know, like, not just staying focused on the negative, because our thoughts really impact our feelings, right? So it's important to also notice what you're thinking, because it's, you know, it's going to directly lead to either positive or negative feelings.
And that leads us into the next question. So if the situation, maybe some time has passed, maybe it's just your gut feeling on this, that your teen is reacting in a way that suggests that there are more challenging things at work here. Maybe there could be a PTSD diagnosis. What are the most effective treatments for PTSD that parents might seek out?
So a lot of research is being done into CBT, which is cognitive behavioral treatment, and we're getting some good results on this. It's showing that it is an effective treatment for trauma. And basically what CBT is a way for people to become more mindful and aware of what they're thinking and the role that their thoughts play and what they do and what they feel. So if they're thinking the world is unsafe, I'm never going to get what I need, I'm never going to be taken care of, then what kind of feelings are you going to have? And just becoming more aware of that, like, of course, you're not going to feel happy about those thoughts, right? You're going to feel sadness and fear. And what kind of behavior will that lead to? People who maybe feel like, well, I'm never going to get what I need, maybe choose to not act. And so they stay home and say, well, I'm never going to get what I need anyway, so I might as well not try. So I'm not even going to go talk to FEMA because they're not going to help me anyway. So the second piece of CBT is, once you are aware of what you're thinking, how it impacts what you do and what you feel, is then challenging those thoughts. Like, okay, so you feel like you're never going to get what you need. How reasonable is that? And what evidence do we have to support and negate that belief? So that's one piece of CBT. Where with regards to trauma, we do prolonged exposure. And so, or PE for short. And so basically there we have people go through their traumatic memories and we focus on what they're thinking and feeling in the moment as they're talking about their memories. And we try to get them to really connect to their emotions in that moment so that they can almost sort of digest the trauma. Often when people talk about what they lived through, they stay disconnected, numbed out, and really just in their head. So they'll say like, oh yeah, you know, my house was destroyed, I almost drowned, but like no affect connected to it. And so in the prolonged exposure piece of the treatment, you're really trying to get them to be really mindful of, no, let's go back and what did that feel like when the waves came in? And what did you think when that happened? And what did you feel in that moment? Well, I thought I was going to die. Okay, and how did that feel? So really getting people to stay connected to that. And another thing that you do with trauma work is teach coping strategies or skills. So you help people learn how to manage their anxiety. So you do that with teaching them how to do progressive muscle relaxation exercises or diaphragmatic deep breathing, not just shallow stress breathing. Teach people how to communicate their needs and just become aware of what they need and want and how to ask for what they need and want. How to say no. Sometimes people have a hard time saying no, and so they overcome it and that kind of thing. And really get them to start socializing, sort of look at how is your life impacted since your traumatic experience and what's missing in it. And so if it's, I've stopped talking to all my friends, I hardly ever hang out with family, then okay, those are the things that need to change. And you really work with them to improve their social connections. We are social creatures. We are meant to be around other people and we are meant to support each other. You know, we always were in groups back caveman days. So trauma tends to isolate people and turn inward, but really the healing, and if you go back in history, this is how we've healed as humanity, is to turn toward the group and get the support from them.
And that really is the beautiful piece, not only about the treatment, but about how these kinds of disasters can really play out and create opportunities for people to come together.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Garcia, for joining us today. I so appreciate the time that you've taken and your insight on this really challenging subject.
Thank you. This was a pleasure. I hope our Hurricane Sandy survivors take note of this and seek out the help they need.
Thank you. Again, Dr. Narina Garcia Arsamont from the Williamsburg Therapy and Wellness in Brooklyn, New York. Dr. Garcia is a licensed clinical psychologist who has worked with individuals through transitions, stress, anxiety, depression. She also worked at the World Trade Center Environmental Healthcare Center at Bellevue Hospital in New York City, which was a program specifically designed for individuals impacted by the 9/11 terrorist attacks. You'll find links to mental health resources directly related to trauma at marywalden.com. Please join us again for more in-depth discussion of the mental health and well-being on The Mary Walden Show, airing on the Health and Wellness channel of Voice America Talk Radio. And check out the Inspiring Women podcast series at marywalden.com. Thank you again to our generous sponsor, Aspen Education, and to all of you for listening. Until next time, be well, and remember, we're building a girl rally, one young woman at a time.
Thank you for listening today. The Mary Walden Show can be heard every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Central Time, and 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great week. And remember, Mary is building a girl rally, one young woman at a time. So please join us.